Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us for today's Fridays from the State House call. First, a quick shout out to our sponsor, Cornerstone Government Affairs. Cornerstone represents the association at the Iowa State Capitol and is helping to bring this call to everyone. So today on the call, just for a quick run of an agenda, I'm going to start, talk about, get everybody level on medical malpractice reform and the win we had there last week. Brandon is going to give you a very recent update on the quality assurance and assessment fee process. He's also going to share with you some specifics on several policy bills that we are monitoring as we approach the first funnel. I'm going to jump back in, give a little bit of a preview on the appropriations process. And then Lori is going to share with you the latest on our public affairs campaign called Keep Long-Term Care Local. And then we will open this up to questions and answers. So to start, I want to start with medical malpractice reform. I know we covered this in the call last week. I believe yesterday, the governor signed the bill, House File 161. So again, was a longstanding high priority for the association and our membership. And we're really pleased, certainly with the outcome at that $1 million cap for our provider group. There's been a little bit of confusion out there. There are two tiers of caps. Hospitals are capped at $2 million and effectively all other medical providers, including nursing homes, assisted living, and home health agencies, are capped at $1 million. So for the purposes of our membership, that is a $1 million cap and was our target all along. So again, the governor has signed that bill. That is the final step in the process that was on its way to becoming law. Happy to both have that victory and to have that behind us on time and as expected as we start to move into the post-funnel phase of the legislative session, which is when we really want to turn most of our attention to the appropriations process. So with that, I'm going to hand this over to Brandon to talk with you about the first leg of a two-leg appropriations process for a skilled nursing facility Medicaid shortfall. Brandon?
Yeah, thanks, Brent. So we've always been talking about the Quality Assurance Assessment Fee program for several of the calls here because it's an important component of our reimbursement strategy here this year and part of our sector sustainability plan. And so we had a great conversation with the department yesterday where we got some additional information. And what we've really been looking for here is some certainty. That way you all have some certainty of the future and of what's going on and some reimbursement that you can count on. And so we feel like we're getting that, and you will see some of that in informational releases from the department here either today and or possibly early next week, depending on approvals. But just a few things that we learned in that meeting was that the SPA is in draft form and is nearly complete, and it is being reviewed internally by the Department of Human Services. It is likely that that will go in by the end of this month. That is still within the expected timeframes that we would have, especially with expedited review of those state plan amendments for an April 1st go live. The second piece of this is there is a public notice that will need to occur, and that will likely happen with the release of the informational letter delineating the program or explaining the program and the working or the changes that you would be experiencing with the provider tax increase. And so those two things, the notice and the IL, should come out, like I said, either today or early next week. Within that informational letter is also a provider town hall or a webinar that we would encourage all members to attend. It is coming from the department. They will be the ones leading that and explaining the program, so that way you can hear it from those who are approving the program and essentially divvying out the payments. What that program will look like. A major component of the provider tax increase, not only will the fees be changing, so obviously the tax that's being paid in per day will change, and then the add-on will change. But a large component is the amount of funds that are remaining that go into rates. And so we learned yesterday that pending further review, but the number that they gave us yesterday was a 9.6% increase. And so this is will be a substantial first leg of that reimbursement strategy that will be effective for April 1st. I think I've said this before, but we likely will not have the rate sheet on April 1st. We will get it likely later in April just because of some of the timing and the inner workings of approvals from CMS and all that. But we would expect that it will be effective back to April 1st. And so, which is a big piece of this, because we know that in a rebase year, oftentimes those rebase rate sheets are not released until September, October timeframe. And so if we were unable to get a 4/1 effective date, you would be operating with similar or current rate sheet with lower rates, or your current rates based on 2018 costs, all the way until September. And so by having the quality assurance assessment fee program rate increase and fee increase effective April 1st, you will be able to operate using those rate sheets for that gap time until any funds that have been appropriated through rebase go into effect, which would be, it would be effective retro to 7/1. So I know that's a lot, but it's also very important, and obviously sheds some light on, and maybe provides some light for you all, at least on the nursing facility side, for brighter days to come. And so this was just an important piece of that process. And then I want to go into a few more other bills that we're kind of monitoring right now. Obviously, we're a couple weeks away from first funnel. During first funnel, it's when the House and Senate policy bills need to make it through committee. If they don't make it through committee, then those bills are essentially dead and cannot move any further. And so we have a few that we're watching right now. Anything that identifies any workforce solutions or promotes the delivery and access to home and community-based services, or improved access or services through home health care, are all things that we're obviously keeping an eye on and supporting when they come through. Also, playing defense on any issues that would obviously be harmful to any of our represented sectors. And so a few that are moving through the process right now: House File 157. This is a workforce-related item. It talks about a tax credit for nurse preceptors, a $1,000 tax credit. And so this is obviously important when we're trying to get more individuals to train workers, especially in getting people into long-term care faster. So this is a piece that, if it has any effect and can improve that ability to have more nurse trainers, that's a worthwhile support for the association. House File 235, it's a bill related to medical reimbursement for services in nursing homes who are registered sex offenders. And so there's been a growing or there's anticipated growth in the number of those individuals needing care. And right now, that is not a population that most nursing facilities will want to care for, especially not mixed in with their population of residents that live there currently. And so what this is doing is directing the department to create a reimbursement structure or like an add-on program that would allow for providers to care for folks of that nature. And so obviously we are in support of that, of a creation of a program. We're also looking to modify and improve that. We don't feel like the sex offender group is necessarily the only sector that could use an additional or an add-on payment for. There are other high care need, combative, behavioral individuals that are also difficult to place that could benefit from some type of enhanced payment. And so we're supportive of including other groups of individuals into that type of program. And then lastly, there's a House Study Bill 24. It's a bill relating to healthcare employment agencies. It cleans up some of the terms within our bill from last year and really helps to put more clarity, I guess, around that program, who should be participating, who's being caught in with a healthcare entity and who's not. There were some unintended consequences, I suppose, or provider groups that were caught in the mix of that weren't needing to last year. And so this is really a cleanup of that going forward. So those are really the ones that are kind of active right now that are moving around and being approved out of subcommittees. I'll turn it to Brent, who's going to talk here now about appropriations. So Brent, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to talk about sort of timeline, anticipated timeline. I know there's a tremendous amount of anxiety, understandably, in the market about when we are going to have clarity on all these things. I think Brandon did a good job of sort of bringing you up to speed on really what was a very positive call that we had with the department yesterday, both in terms of the overall dollar figure inside that provider tax increase. And we continue to grow in our confidence that this will take effect with an effective date of April 1st. As Brandon mentioned, and I did as well, the provider tax increase is the first leg of a two-leg reimbursement strategy at the association. The second leg is traditional appropriations lobbying. And, you know, the first funnel, which Brandon mentioned is a couple of weeks away, really serves as the unofficial kickoff to the budget process at the State House. And you'll note that we are holding our Day on the Hill event on March 8th. I hope everybody that's, as an aside, I hope everybody that's on the call today is registered to attend Day on the Hill. This is absolutely the most important grassroots day in the history of our sector. And we are asking for you all to participate in that. You can register online at iowahealthcare.org for that. We've timed that to really align with the kickoff to the budget process and are certainly in the midst of our leadership, the beginnings of our leadership meetings during session now. You can see Maria Bentrot's not on this call. She's actually with Speaker Grassley for the better part of today, visiting a nursing home and meeting on our appropriations needs. So the big question is, when is there going to be clarity? And it's difficult to pin down specifically. Typically, in a normal year, non-election year, we would expect really to start to have a level of nothing's done till it's done. You won't see anything from the association officially in terms of what the appropriations number is going to be for all three sectors. And I'm going to talk about all three until really the gavel falls, because it'll be the last thing the legislature does. But typically the latter part of April is when that begins to wrap up. That can be impacted. The timeline can be impacted by whether or not there is a particularly difficult or controversial issue that remains outstanding in the way of sine die and the budget process. The big one that's left out there, obviously, if you're following the news, the legislature has done a number of big things already, from school choice reform to tort reform, a number of other big ticket items. The one that remains out there is tax reform, further tax reform. That's something that we would expect the legislature to take up here in the latter part of their session. And something like tax reform certainly has the prospect of bogging things down. I think that just looking at the pace at which the legislature is ticking along right now, which is rapidly on big ticket items, I think it's fairly unlikely that we will see a multi-week delay like we've seen in some cases for big ticket items that get in the way of the budget. So I think right now, based on what we can forecast, we expect to probably have some budgetary clarity here toward the latter part of April. Now, specific to all three sectors, starting with the skilled nursing facility Medicaid side, you're all familiar with an overall $60 million shortfall. We believe that the provider tax increase will produce rate relief of about anywhere between 20 and 25 million to bite into that, which will then result in a final appropriations ask of somewhere between 35 and 40 million. Again, too early to tell where we come there. Certainly the first shot that we saw was positive from Governor Reynolds in her budget with an inclusion of $15 million. Certainly not what we need, but we're treating that as a floor. And again, that comes in as her highest number for us on record. We are also requesting a state appropriation of $3.2 million for home health LUPA rates. And I see Leah Galvin is on the call today. Leah is the chair of our home health board. Home health was Medicaid rates were helped and lifted last session successfully with about a $1.8 million Medicaid rate enhancement that went specifically to rural agencies through a specific methodology. We are advocating for an across the board increase of $3.2 million to bring home health LUPA rates up to cost coverage. And we're also promoting an increase in the elderly waiver. Those of you that are familiar with the HCBS space, that is a rate that can only be increased across the entire waiver system. And so we are in alignment with a number of groups, including in this case, the Department of Health and Human Services, in calling for a material increase in the HCBS waiver funding stream, of which our elderly waiver providers would benefit. We're also asking the legislature to continue their work from the last couple of years to increase service rates for HCBS elderly waivers and clarify and make better the administrative process associated with billing for those rates, which really gets in the way even more than the money right now for a lot of our providers. So again, all those items, those are all really wrapped up in the HHS budget, which is traditionally effectively the last thing that the Iowa legislature does before they get out of Dodge. So more to come on that. I feel as good as we can be. We are on schedule and on level with our strategy at the association as it stands today. We wanted to get our major policy issue, tort reform, out of the way. We wanted to stave off additional defensive issues, which we've been able to successfully thus far. We wanted to get certainty in the market on quality assurance and assessment fee ahead of the first funnel. I believe we're going to meet that goal and put ourselves in a position to be laser focused as a membership on the appropriations process for all three sectors in the latter part of the legislative session. Lori's going to talk with you about the specific resources that you have available to you now to help carry that message. She's also going to mention a call to action that went out this week that references some of these materials. But I'll say again, we need you at Day on the Hill, and we will not be successful if we don't have member engagement, not only for you all on this call, but those that are your colleagues, the buildings that you partner with or are under your control. We need an all hands on deck situation. And so with that, I'm going to ask Lori, and I believe Brandon, by now you've probably made Lori a co-host, and she is going to share her screen to give you an update on our public affairs campaign called Keep Long-Term Care Local. Lori?
Thanks, Brent. Let me get my screen up here for everyone to see the campaign. Do you see it, Brandon? Okay, awesome. So I just want to give you a quick update on what we're calling as our Keep Long-Term Care Local campaign. This is a strategic multimedia campaign to help support our advocacy efforts for funding this session. And this is a microsite we're using as part of the campaign that has a plethora of resources that you can use when communicating about funding needs with your legislators. We are also trying to drive traffic to this website through a campaign. We've got about $100,000 in paid advertising in the field right now that is specifically targeting legislators at the state capitol. We're using a strategy called geofencing. So if they are on like a local news site or anything at the capitol, they'll get ads that will drive them to this website. We're running ads on Iowa Public Radio during live drive time and legislative programming, all to drive them to these resources as well. And we're doing quite a bit of earned media outreach as well. And all of those resources are also, some of the earned media resources are also on this website. So if you haven't been on this website before, I just encourage you to take a look. One of the key components of this campaign is to use messaging that comes directly from either family members or frontline workers or all of you, because we feel that just gives more strength and credibility to our messaging. So we have a lot of video testimonials we've been recording out here that you can share at any time with legislators that really share the story and the frontline impact on families.
And Lori, let me stop you. Can you go ahead and maximize your screen because it's not rendering correctly. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I haven't shared much on this before, so thank you. Does that look better? Great. Another resource we have is the closures that are happening. It's been a very important talking point to let the legislators see, like in their own town, we have a map on here. We can see how close closures are in their own communities. We're keeping this up to date so they can see the impact there. We also have our key talking points here. So if you're ever wondering, like, what are some of the key messages you need to get across to when you're talking to your legislators, we have those right here and some of the stats and information we're using when we talk to them. And just hopefully very easy to use. We have a lot of testimonials. So for those of you who have recorded video testimonials, I thank you. We will be using these throughout the legislative session. We're hoping to use it maybe even after a day on the Hill to continue to follow up with people after they see you in person. Then we want to thank them again with videos from people in their own communities to keep this front and center for them. Your district impact reports can be found here under the impact tab. So here you can find not only statewide impact, but drill down by your Iowa House and Iowa Senate district and pull those reports specifically for your lawmaker and share with them key stats as well, specific to their community, even have it personalized to the representative's name. So that really helps with the impact. And then last but not least, we've been doing a lot on the earned media front as well, because we know that legislators follow the media, especially their local media. And so our earned media strategy is very, very targeted and very strategic. And we're using a lot of member focused messaging in those key legislative districts in their hometown newspapers. We identified about 50 key legislators that have either like influencing decisions or on committees or leadership that are going to really be involved in these funding decisions. And we specifically targeted their local newspapers and their local media and asked several members to write op-eds, and we're getting those placed now in those local media channels so that those legislators are sure to see them. And then we're also capturing coverage of closures and all of the interviews we've done to help also make the case for funding is needed to stave off these closures. And we've done a number of interviews. Actually, this strategy started long before the session. We met with some key media influencers. Reporters tend to follow other reporters. So we met with like Kay Henderson of Radio Iowa. Tony Lays used to be at Des Moines Register and had interviews with them. And so once those stories dropped, other reporters picked it up. So we were quoted in dozens of articles here, even if you weren't talking about the funding need. And we're also amplifying all of these messages on our social media channels. So if you follow us on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, if there's a media story that's covered, we're amplifying it there. And then we're also, you know, three or four times a week taking content from this website and sharing it via social media. And even tagging legislators where we can, like if they're quoted in an article or cited in an article, we'll tag them and raise awareness of this issue as well. So all of these tools are available for you to use as well. If you have any questions on using it or other ideas of content to add, feel free to let me know. This will be up and running throughout the whole session.
Thank you, Lori. With that, I think that covers what we wanted to cover topically. And I think we can move into question and answer. Brandon, I'll let you facilitate that. I'm not sure exactly how we do that typically.
Yeah, we just let, you know, if you want to unmute, you can definitely unmute. If you'd like to throw something in the chat, you can do that as well. One question that came directly to me, which would be applicable to our nursing facility folks, is that 9.6% asking, is that applicable or does that go towards the base rates? That is yes. It does go towards your base rates, increasing those April 1st. So that's a positive, with the change to the rate, the underlying rate structure. And so that's why the 9.6% is such a positive movement for nursing facilities.
I have a question. I don't want to muddy the water, certainly, of the legislative strategy, but I recently was visiting with a colleague over in Papillion, which would be about 20 minutes to our west, and their current today Medicaid rate is $300 a day. We're sitting at 220. And so it seems Iowa's been less than responsive overall. Also, if we were sitting 20 minutes to our west, we would have received $488,000 from the state in ARPA funds. Meanwhile, we received 43. So while fixing the problem going forward is one strategy, I'm just wondering, how are we advocating for the hole that's been created by the lack of responsiveness by the state of Iowa?
Well, Julian, I think that right now we are laser focused on the rate question. Our strategy has been to focus on rate relief. Really, when you know one state, you know one state when it comes to the last couple of years. We rebased last in 21. Nebraska rebased in 2022. I think that when we look at in cash infusions during COVID, because of our rebase cycle being in 2021, we focused our political capital on rate relief less than one-time money. Certainly, we're not happy that we were not recipients of more one-time money in our state. But in terms of looking back on that, I don't view it as particularly productive to relitigate that. And so I think that we have a great opportunity ahead of us to close this gap and see where we land from there. Certainly, it's going to require ongoing operational innovation on the part of our providers to adapt to the new playing field that we're all a part of, and the association wants to be a part of that discussion and provide assistance to our members to do that. But you know, we're advocating for as much money as we possibly can, and whether that sort of addresses what happened in the past or what happens on a go forward, I think it's more of a messaging issue. But I feel confident about our strategy. And it's very difficult, really to answer, and make apples to apples comparisons, across state lines. It's difficult for us to do that in my experience.
Do you have any other questions? You can either unmute or throw it in the chat.
Say, Brent or Brandon, we've had a lot of, I'd say, very positive interest from staff, family, board members, residents, wanting their voice to be heard. Obviously, we could be, you know, we're recommending they write to legislators and all that, but how best do we plug them in? I don't think you've got the capacity for day at the Capitol to have a whole bunch of people from Luther Park showing up, but what would be your recommendations? I just want to make sure we're in alignment with how you see that for the broader audience, kind of to tap into the advocacy.
Thanks for that question, John. And I'm going to direct that over to Lori. I think that there's a lot that residents and families and staff can do from behind a screen in terms of some of the resources that she referenced. Lori, what's the best way to get people an opportunity to connect with legislators?
Yeah, that would be fantastic to have their stories. So we have a couple different options that we can do. We can easily record a video of them, do a video call with them, and record their story and share it that way via our website and emails to legislators. We also have a pretty good op-ed writing template. So if they want to write an op-ed for their local newspaper, that is also very powerful as well. So I would encourage those two tools and happy to connect with you with those resources and get something scheduled if you have specific people in mind.
We have at times also modified that op-ed template into like a letter format. So then you know what talking points to hit on if you do want to write a letter to your legislator, which it sounds like some of your folks are wanting to do, John. So we can help with that too. Absolutely.
Okay. All right.
I would also say, John, that, and this is really for everyone, if you have any family members who are willing to be a contact for media inquiries on this subject, please let Lori know that. You know, one of the, probably the story that was able to kick off our earned media campaign, the Tony Lay story in Kaiser Health News, which was then picked up by NBC News and throughout the country, that was the product of us working with him to identify a specific family member who could tell a public interest story about the impact of a closure on their family. And those are extremely compelling contacts for reporters to have. So if you have anybody like that, we have regular and routine media inquiries asking that question. Can you connect me with families that are affected by this? They much rather would speak with them than they would with a official representative like the association.
Right. Okay. Very good. Thank you.
It was also great, as Lori was on the media page of that keepltclocal.com, seeing the op-ed scroll across, and then obviously many of you are participating in these calls and staying updated. So that's kind of cool to see too. So thanks to those who have written op-eds. We really appreciate that, and it's helping to tell the story. And so that's ultimately what we need to do. So, all right. Well, I think we are a little over on our time today, but appreciate everyone for participating in these calls. We'll be back again on next Friday at 10. Thanks again to our sponsor, Cornerstone Government Affairs, and everyone have a great weekend. Thanks.